Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to Dudes on Hockey. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, when it rains, people forget how to drive.
I agree.
It took me 40 minutes to get to your house. What normally would be about a 5-minute drive for me took 40 minutes for no reason other than it was a little wet outside, dude.
Yeah.
Hey, it starts raining, people forget how to drive.
In California.
I guess. I mean, is it like this in other states? Is it like this in Canada? What about in jolly old England or Australia? We need our international listeners to weigh in. When it rains, do people start driving on the other side of the road? Or in our case, the right side?
I doubt it. I think California drivers are wimps and they're used to sunny days. And if it's not sunny, they go crazy and they don't understand what exactly they're supposed to do when there's this wet stuff on the road.
Have you ever driven overseas?
No, usually I only drive on the roads. Ha-ha! Sorry.
Wow. I can hear the crickets.
Wait, where are they?
That's about right, dude. Yeah. You never driven in another country?
No, I don't think I have.
I have.
Yeah, was it fun?
It was New Jersey.
Get in.
Wow. What a great start to the show, dude.
Yeah, we're
hot and cold, just like the Sharks.
Wow. It's really going good.
Don't forget to tip your waitress. Yeah. Try the veal. It's delicious.
Where's chicken parm? Philly, we didn't have Philly before last week. So
yeah, we have four games to talk about.
Philly, Buffalo,
Philly,
Chicago.
Buffalo, Chicago.
And Dallas.
And Dallas, dude.
Plus lots of other news.
Miscellaneous NHL news and stuff. We've got a couple emails, dude. How are you?
I'm doing great, dude.
Are you happy? Are you upbeat? You know, sometimes when it rains outside, people sort of get depressed. I know Sharks fans are kind of up and down. Last night, the guy next to us started booing rather early.
Yes.
It was 1-0, and the boos came out from the guy next to us. I was like, hey, listen, simmer down.
Right.
We don't boo here until the end of the shootout.
That's right.
Okay. you boo at the end of the shootout.
We don't boo until the Stars have more zone time on the penalty kill than we do on the power play.
You want to start with Dallas?
Yeah, let's start with them.
First of all, I was impressed by the Dallas Stars.
Yes.
Dallas Stars look to be legit. Their top two lines are very good. And while we had a hard time naming players on their bottom six,
yes, we did,
forward spots, they were effective in the minutes they played, and their defense is effective as well. And Andrew Raycroft, as much as I loathe him, was the number one star of the game. He played well. Dallas Stars are a playoff team for all intents and purposes, dude.
I think so. Why do you loathe Andrew Raycroft exactly?
I loathe him because he blew it this week.
Yes, yes, he did.
For our big grudge match, Henry's High Life steak dinner. I blame Andrew Raycroft if Carey Lehtinen went out with back stiffness and you won.
I won.
4-3. You almost blew it
for
yourself. I get this text from Mike. The Blackhawks are up 4-1. For those of you who didn't listen last week, you know that we had a pickoff. We were tied, so we went to a one-game challenge. I took the Stars. Mike took the Hawks. Kane and Hossa out. I think I have the advantage. Lehtinen out. Raycroft in. 4-1. Stars come roaring back. 4-3. I'm thinking Mike's going to have to eat his ribs and pay for them himself. And then it was all over.
And then that was it.
Dude, I will gladly buy your ribs.
It's going to
be fun. Congratulations, dude.
Thank you, dude.
Way to go.
Yes, it's going to be
I'm so proud of you.
It's going to be a fun dinner.
I'm looking forward to it. You're welcome.
Yes. Well, I take my win with graciousness. That's what I do.
You do?
I try.
You didn't over texting.
What do you mean? I was excited. I didn't say like in your face or anything.
I
just said I can taste the Henrys.
I believe that's what I said. I'm going to pull up the text.
Oh, he's going to the tape, is he?
The text exactly reads, suck it, you're taking me to Henry's. That doesn't sound like very gracious.
That is a counterfeit text, sir.
It says, you made that up. From Mike Piotti.
Yeah.
Okay.
You made that
up. Dude, the listeners would agree that while you may be the champion, maybe you need a little bit of humble pie. The Dallas Stars, dude.
Yes.
Are a good team.
They do an impressive puck pursuit style of defense. They are all over the Sharks. Wherever they are with the puck, the Dallas Stars are coming after them to try and take it away. And especially with the Sharks in the offensive zone, really the only person that had any sort of real success at keeping the puck around was Ryan Klo, mostly because he's just a big guy. He's gotten really adept at keeping, shielding the defender with his body. But still, even when he does that, the puck's on the boards and his back is to the net. So it's not like there's a ton of chances to be had. So, yeah, I mean, the Sharks were stymied to a large extent, and it was really only the Couture line that had any level of success during the game. Klo with both goals. And again, the number one line, the Joe Thornton line, coming up short. They're really in a funk right now. And I read a column by Scott Cullen on TSN saying that, you know, Patrick Marleau and Joe Pavelski both have been, you know, sort of disappointing in the month of December for sure. So,
I'd say so. I was pretty surprised and hadn't been paying attention for a while until I looked at their stats after that road trip. This was a miserable road trip for Patrick Marleau.
Yes.
I mean, he went -1 in Philly, -3 in Buffalo, -1 in Chicago, and -1 in Montreal, and -3 against Detroit. I mean, before you know it, I mean, he starts November 26th, probably barely in the minus, and then since then, he's been a -11 since November 26th. I mean, that's terrible. I mean, the guy is supposed to be one of our best players. Pavelski has been bad too. So what do you do when you got two guys playing poorly? You put them together so they can suck it up together, dude. That's and that's right. What's been happening. The Pavelski-Marleau line has been pretty abysmal. Finally, they broke that up last night, and we saw the jumbo heated patty line together for the majority of the game last night. I mean, Marleau did get five shots, but something we noticed last night was he takes it down and pulls up at the boards almost every time.
Dude. Right. There was one time where he actually drove to the net, but this is one of the fastest guys in the NHL, and he drives down the side, and he does what coaches call a delay, which is he curls towards the boards to protect the puck and then sort of looks to see who's coming down the middle in anticipation of a pass. And when the Sharks are hurting for offense, I don't understand why he doesn't continue to use his speed and skating ability to drive the puck to the net, give Andrew Raycroft two guys to think about and a loose puck to think about. And to me, it just looks like lack of confidence. It looks like Marleau doesn't think he can take it to the net. And we've seen him do it over the years many times where he just blows past a person, uses a wrist shot, and just beats the goalie badly. And he did it once and it wasn't successful. But you know what? It there was a rebound chance on that play and everything else. And when you pull up and wait for somebody else, that gives the defense a chance to get back into position. It was never successful.
Is this a Marleau thing or is this a coaching thing?
Well, I think it's a Marleau thing. Because you see Healy trying to dangle all over the ice.
Right.
Sometimes, maybe not advisedly, but sometimes it's a pretty impressive
show. It certainly
show.
Doesn't seem like Ben Ferriero's gotten that memo. Like, he takes it to the net almost every time. Logan Couture drives the net. Those guys are trying to take the chances right to the goaltender. I'm kind of hoping maybe Patrick Marleau might break out of this, dude. I mean, we've seen, 2 years ago, a bad season for Patrick Marleau. Last year, probably his best season as a pro.
Yeah.
And this year,
he looks
not
rattled.
So good. I mean, you know, he's
well,
off.
He started great.
He did start well, and lately he has been in the dumps, dude. Let's hope that Marlowe's able to find his game. So let's go backwards now. So we've got the Dallas game.
Chicago now.
And we're at Chicago. A little bit of a grudge match. The Blackhawks still missing some of their key players. Ryan Klo again, you know, the number one star of
the NHL.
Of the NHL for the week.
That's right.
Comes up huge. What do you think in terms of the goalie situation that's going on in Chicago, Crawford versus Turco? We saw Crawford on Saturday.
Right.
Do you think
he's been their stronger goalie?
Right.
He has better stats than Marty Turco right now. So It may have looked like to Sharks fans that the Sharks were facing the backup, and it might have given Chicago sort of a ready-made excuse. I know you sometimes think about that when you have the backup in play. Well, we don't know who the backup is now anymore, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But in terms of pure stats, Corey Crawford is doing better than Marty Turco, and he came up with some pretty impressive saves that night. So, yeah, I was really impressed by the Sharks' output. I thought that, it's a road trip. A lot of times you see the first home game after a road trip. The home team doesn't look so great. That's really kind of what happened to Detroit when we beat up on them in Detroit last week, right before we recorded. And, the Sharks really responded well. Was it a perfect game? No, not at all. But, Chicago is a really good team. Jonathan Toews had some good chances. No Patrick Kane to our benefit. No Marian Hossa to our benefit. But you know what? That team is still pretty damn dangerous. And we handled them. So I'm happy, right? Especially after all of the ups and downs the Sharks have had. It's a tough opponent and they beat them.
Yeah, I guess I still look at how the roster that we faced. And Bickle, Boynton, Cullimore, Dowell, Hendry, Morin, Scott, Skeely, Stahlberg. You're kind of looking at guys who are, fringe NHL players taking up 2/3 of that roster right now. No Kane, no Hossa. I know because we came off the road trip, that's a trap game a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
But, if we play that roster, that game shouldn't go to OT. That shouldn't go to OT. And this is still sort of that same story that we've been talking about, the Sharks. Like, that roster, like the names we just listed, we should kill those guys. Like, it should not be close. So I wasn't as happy. I think I was happy because I did expect them to have a letdown based on the fact that they just got off a long road trip, and we've seen it so many times from not just the Sharks, but almost every team in the NHL. They come back off a 5-game, 6-game road trip and have a bummer game off that. So I guess we'll take the win there, dude. Looking now at Buffalo.
Right. Well, that was just a disappointing game. It's just a bad loss. Sharks weren't in it. It looked like for a second there, they're going to come back with
they're going to pull a Philly.
They're going to pull another amazing comeback like they did against Detroit and like they did against Philly. I think it was 4-1. They got it back to 4-3, and then it ended up 6-3 with 2 goals scored in the last 30 seconds, one an empty net and one just sort of a 2-on-1 or 2-on-none that the Sharks just frankly didn't care about with who was it? Travis Roy or somebody scoring with like 3 seconds left. Mm-hmm. It's like, who cares? Mm-hmm. But makes it look a little bit worse than it was, but it's still the same kind of Sharks that we've seen even in the Dallas game, which is the first in the Dallas game. It was the first 10 minutes in Buffalo. It was the first period, maybe the first period and a half, where Sharks just didn't look very good at all. They just didn't look ready. I mean, it was the second half of back-to-back, and they beat Philly in a really emotional game. Well, emotional game, or certainly one of the biggest comebacks the Sharks have ever had. They, against Philly, they scored 3 goals in the third period to tie and then won it in the shootout after the puck almost crossed the line in overtime with literally 0.1 seconds left.
Right, right.
So in terms of a crazy adrenaline-filled affair, that's what we had in Philly, and that was the opposite of what we had in Buffalo, and it showed.
Yeah, Flyers fans were all upset about that. I said, what are you mad? I mean, you look at the tape.
Yeah.
You can be mad all you want. It didn't score.
Yeah, get mad.
Like, okay, we're mad because Couture clearly scored in the shootout last night.
And
if you go back and look that, but you couldn't see the puck as it goes over. Raycroft is over it, hovering over it, squatting on it like he's in the woods.
Right.
So
like he's laying it.
He did. And look, it's an egg. So what are you going to do? The refs make the right call both times. You can't overturn it. You can't see the puck.
I mean, there's clearly a frame in the video that shows the clock at 0.0 seconds and the puck's not in over the line. That's not a goal where I come from. I mean, the only person you could be mad at is Mike Richards for not shooting sooner, I guess. I mean, what else can you do? I mean, is it lucky? Of course it's lucky. But you know what? It happens. I mean, it's not like the Sharks get to control the clock. So,
all right, I want you to be honest. Did you leave the Sharks considering, did you think that they were dead in that Flyers game, just completely dead?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, Philly's one of the best teams in the NHL right now. I mean, they're down by 3 in the third period. It never even occurred to me that they'd come all the way back. I was hoping they'd make a game of it, salvage some dignity. But no, they came all the way back. They started believing in themselves all of a sudden.
I knew when that goal didn't count. I knew, I was like, we're winning this game. Like that, that's,
oh,
that
was, you mean in overtime?
Yeah. When the goal didn't go in, I was like, yeah,
that's it. Yeah.
You know, this is one of those ones where just a total backbreaker for the other team.
Yeah. Yeah.
An inspiring effort. You know, we see a similar story in Detroit, maybe not quite as dramatic, but a flat start and then two really great periods of hockey. I mean, it just makes it even more frustrating, maybe.
It kind of does, doesn't it? It's like it's like a paper cut that won't heal. It just kind of gets ripped open over and over again. It's like, oh, look at the Sharks, you know, they're doing well, and then it's like, oh, pour a little bit more lemon juice on it. Oh, now they're playing like crap, and you know, Dallas scores first, and the Sharks.
We saw it last night in that second goal the Sharks had.
Yeah,
where they just jumped all over Dallas. They refused that the puck would not leave the zone, and Demers recognized how tired they were, dude.
That's right.
And as you kind of described that play to me last night, I mean, he just drove it straight to the net and fired it, and the Sharks willed that goal in. They were they're the more talented team.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at Dallas and the Sharks, they're the more talented team. They sometimes don't play like it.
Yeah.
And that's what's so frustrating, I think, for so many of us as fans. We know what they're capable of, and they show it to us in stretches, but too often they go flat, dude, and they can't seem to quite break out of that pattern.
Right, right. Well, it's the same story every week. We don't need to continue to go over why the Sharks are hot and cold, because frankly, nobody really knows. If they knew, they would try and fix it. You know, the story continues, the troubles continue. I'm happy to see the Sharks get points against Dallas, who is a tough team. I'm happy to see the Sharks get 2 points against Chicago, get 2 points against Philly, get 2 points against Detroit. I mean, none of these teams are slouches in the NHL right now. And if you look at their last five games, only Buffalo is not probably going to be a fairly high seed in the playoffs. And the Sharks got, three wins and a loss in overtime. As far as a grade goes on the curve for the Sharks season, that's a healthy B+, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's just sort of how they've been having to pull it off.
Right.
That's a little bit frustrating. A lot of the recent success, I think, can be attributed not just to the hotness of the Klo, Couture, and Ferriero line, but also to the play of our new number one goaltender, the guy who we were discussing maybe putting on waivers even a couple of weeks ago.
I know.
Has Antti Niemi, for the moment, clearly claimed the number one job?
I think so. And there's two reasons for that. One is that he's played really well in the last few games he's played. And I think that we had a stat, or we quoted a stat sort of off the top of our heads last week about Nidamaki that actually wasn't true. I think we said he was a top 10 or 15 goaltender in terms of stats. And actually, he had dipped because his previous two starts were not good. He was in the 800 range in both of those, I think like 820 in the most recent one. So yeah, we've seen Nidamaki definitely dip a bit, and we've certainly seen a pretty meteoric rise from Niemi here in the past few games. So he's the hot hand. You go with him. You give Nidamaki a start, hopefully, and you see if he can claim it back. I mean, this is what a tandem's all about, right? This is what we wanted, right?
Right. It's you go with the hot hand. There's a we know that especially Nidamaki has a reputation for being streaky. So we rode out the streak to start the season, and now we're going to ride Niemi's streak, and then Niemi stumbles, Nidamaki's going to get the call.
Right.
So yeah, I guess that is what we wanted, competition at the goaltender position. And now that it's happening, we're still not happy with that.
Yeah, now we're still not happy with
anything. We don't like anything. You look at Niemi's last six games, you know, he has allowed over three goals just once, you know, two against Dallas, one against Chicago, two against Detroit, three against Montreal, and zero against Ottawa. I mean, he's playing well. He has over 900 save percentage in several of those games. A shutout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he certainly has earned the right to stay in the crease, dude.
That's
so
right.
I think we can expect to see more Niemi, you know, probably at least two out of three games on this road trip.
Right. So Monday morning quarterbacking, we thought, oh, you know, McClellan isn't playing him at the right time. But now that it's Thursday or Friday, it looks like okay, well, maybe they did the right thing in playing Niemi, and he's playing pretty well. And I think you gotta continue with Niemi as long as you can. And, you know, maybe second half of a back-to-back. Now it's Nidamaki's, turn to start and maybe get a little bit of a run going in case Niemi falters. But This is exactly what we wanted.
I'm going to expect to see Nidamaki in Nashville. I think Nidamaki is going to play in Nashville. I think Niemi is going to see Dallas again.
Yes.
On Thursday. Absolutely. And then I would expect that Niemi will be back in the pipes when they go to St. Louis.
Yeah. The only thing about Niemi is he looked really bad in the shootout, but what can you do? It's two shots. But he looked really bad. Yeah.
I was wondering if maybe Nabokov had slid in there when he came back on the plane from the KHL.
Oh, yeah.
We got to get to that.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that now then.
All right. We got an email, right?
Yes, we did, from Dmitry on Nabokov, who I think Dmitry was right on top of the breaking news, and he actually sent us a link to a story in Russian, but it was on
TSN. I could read.
You could read.
I did, yeah.
Very good for you.
Yeah.
And but we, you know, it's on TSN and everything else. So, and of course, it was reported by David Pollack in the Mercury News. But for those of you that didn't hear, Nabokov is out of the KHL. He was completely released from his contract, which I believe was 4 years, a four-year, $4 million per year contract, completely released of it for family issues, family reasons.
Uh-huh.
And he is back in the States. I think, you know, he has a home in San Jose. I think he's back in San Jose. I heard various accounts of whether his wife and children were in Russia with him, or they never went to Russia with him, or they recently left Russia. I don't know exactly what the story is with his family, but it's not that hard to imagine how isolating and alienating it would be to be an American not speaking Russian in St. Petersburg, which of course has a climate that is completely different than California, and dealing with a completely different culture that you don't understand, a language that you don't understand, and by most accounts of what I've read from the KHL, accommodations that maybe aren't as quite as luxurious as the NHL. So that could be a really tough situation, especially with young kids. He's a big wimp for leaving. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, it's not that hard of a stretch. I mean, Nabokov had a pretty cush lifestyle when you think about it, in San Jose for many years. And it might have been a little tough to suck it up there in St. Petersburg. And you know what? He's probably got some good money in the bank. And if that's what's right for him and his family, then good for him, right? Who are we to question that?
But it's not like he's not going to find a job in the NHL. There are jobs there to be had. It's just, you know, the money's not going to be there.
That's
right. And I think he may have been either persuaded by his agent or by himself that he was going to take his last final payday. And when he finally got over there, he realized, you know, freezing his pucks off wasn't worth it.
Right.
And playing in the KHL was a major disappointment. He was a disappointment over there. Wasn't playing the level of hockey that we've seen from him. And now he's back, dude.
Yeah,
so,
he's back.
Go ahead.
And Dmitry asks, what do you think is next for Yevgeny? And actually, I noticed that Dmitry spelled Yevgeny slightly differently, but also a Russian spelling. So
nice. Well, he's legit.
G-E-N-I-Y.
He's the real deal.
I've also seen it with a Y in the front. So maybe, Dmitry, you can explain to us, why do they spell it differently? You know, like Yevgeny Kafelnikov, who used to play pro tennis, had a Y in the front of his name and his spelling. So I don't understand. I don't understand these crazy Russian characters. Dude!
Oh my God.
That's a 5-minute digression about a noble culture in Europe. Okay.
Wake me up when you're done.
I'm done already. What do you think is next for Nabokov?
I've got two questions for you, dude. First, if you could undo it all and bring back Nabokov right now, would you rather have him than these two guys?
Let me think. No.
Okay. Really?
You look at his stats in the KHL, they're not good, right? He's under 900.
I agree.
Goals against of close to four.
I agree. I think there is, for those people who might be wondering, there is a 0% chance of Nabokov ending up back in San Jose, and I smell another soundbite, don't you? Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah,
just
seriously.
Throw it right back in my face. Yeah. So what's next for Nabokov? I have a prediction.
Yeah?
I think he's going to Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
I think it's the team that makes the most sense. They have $10 million worth of cap room, and the Dan Ellis, Mike
Smith
experiment has failed.
Big time.
They've allowed the most goals in the NHL, at least in the Eastern Conference. Bad. Yeah. Bad.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys are playing terribly. So, you know, you could see Eisman picking up the phone and saying, listen, I know you didn't like it where it was cold. How about coming where it's warm all the time, baby?
That's right.
We've got a good set of players here. If you play well, we can discuss having a long-term deal, because both those guys, their contracts are up. So Nabokov has an opportunity there to maybe grab that starting job and play on a team that's going to make the playoffs.
Right. So let's go further here. What do you think is the right kind of money for Nabokov here? You got $4 million in the KHL. you know, he made $5 million last year in San Jose. What kind of money do you think we're talking here?
2.5
Really, that much?
Yeah, I think they can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
They've got $10 million of cap room. They've got almost 11. 1 year, 2.5
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
the problem might have been here is that Nabokov was probably looking for a 3 or 4 year deal, and the only yes. people who wanted to give it to him was, you know, the KHL. So come back, take the money. It might even be more money. I mean, maybe mm-hmm. maybe it'll be.
Nah, I can't see that.
Well, you know,
I can't see that. Because he would have taken it here, I think. Don't you think he would have taken year, $5 million, then 4 years, $4 million?
Some players get mesmerized by term. I mean, you mm-hmm. know, you get mesmerized by the term, the long-term money. Obviously, didn't work out. What percentage do you put on it that Nabokov resurfaces in the NHL this season?
Well, considering the number of goalies that don't have jobs in the NHL... I'm not going to go close to 100%, but I'm going to go over even money. I'll say 60%.
I'm going to go 90%.
Wow, really?
90, because what's he going to do? Sit out? Not play?
Well, the question is, are people going to give him an offer?
Yes. Why wouldn't you?
I don't know.
I mean, even if it is to...
It's not that he had a lot of offers in the summertime. Why is he going to have a lot of offers now?
We don't know that, but we don't know. People might have been offering 1 year.
I guess you're right.
You know, I mean, most that, you know, Antti Niemi was sitting around. All he could get was 1 year.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these other guys, all they could get was 1 year or 2 years, a little term. I mean, he might be getting offers from somewhere like Edmonton where he's like, no. I mean, yeah. like, I don't want to go. Now he might go. You know, you've got...
The other team I see... Well, you mentioned Washington when we had this conversation.
Yeah.
Are you rethinking that?
No. I mean, I think it's possible. I didn't really think of that when I saw it mentioned on Working the Corners. And I was like, yeah, okay. We had talked about Nabokov being in Washington in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
But
I thought Ottawa maybe might have an outside chance because their goalies haven't been great.
Yeah, but Brian Elliott has been good. It's just they've really struggled... All over. That's not a good hockey team.
Dude. Yeah, and you're right. They're not really in a position where they can say, okay, well, if we just get a better goalie, then we have a chance to make the playoffs. I mean, they're kind of in trouble anyway. I thought they had great... I remember distinctly saying they had a good top 6D, and I still hold to that. The problem is they have a terrible bottom 9 forwards. And Jason Spezza is not playing all that great either. So, Ottawa's in a little bit of trouble here.
I mean,
so,
he could just wait and, you know, see... Who gets hurt and fill in there? I mean, can you imagine? How about this for a nightmare scenario? Let me spell it out for you. Carey Lehtinen's long-term injury problems completely plague him, and Nabokov signs with Dallas.
Right. No, I can't.
What do you mean you can't see that?
I can't see it.
Of course, it's very possible. Carey Lehtinen's one of the most injury-plagued goalies of the last 5 years in the NHL.
Yeah, that's
the
true.
The guy cannot make it through a full season. They are not going to go with Andrew Raycroft all the way through.
You're right about
that. That guy's a tool.
All right. All right, dude. We got more questions here. Okay. Let's break it up here. David emailed. He said, I just moved to San Jose, and I'm looking for a great place to watch away Sharks games. I've heard about Stanley's, but was wondering if there's any other great bars to watch a Sharks game. Dude, any immediate candidates pop into mind?
Well, we do enjoy going to Henry's High Life. They have a bar. They always have the Sharks game on. It might not be able to hear the sound, but if you go into a bar, you're not going to hear that anyways. The Brit downtown San Jose is a good place to watch a game.
Yeah, here. Brit downtown, which at least at one time was partially owned by Owen Nolan. I don't know if it still is.
Right.
I know his jersey's still up in there. I'm also a fan of Coaches, which is in Campbell. They have a big front projection situation. They pull down a big screen. You can usually get the sound there. The one thing I worry about, David, sometimes is when you're talking about a conflict between the Sharks and another Bay Area team, oftentimes the tie does not go to the Sharks. With the exception of Stanley's, as you mentioned. So if you go to Stanley's and there's a Sharks game, that is always going to be front and center at Stanley's. So you may want to check your local listings. I mean, if it's, you know, a Sunday and the Niners are playing, it might go to the Niners. But, you know, if there's nothing, no other major sports happenings in the Bay Area, most bars I think will be pretty good. But I think the ones we mentioned are good. And I hope people will respond in the comment thread of this podcast and throw in their 2 cents, because I'm sure there's some great drinking establishments all over this great county of ours that are excellent locations to watch a Sharks game.
Downtown San Jose is usually pretty loyal in terms of like putting on the Sharks first. Another place to do it that I think we maybe have watched a game together. I've watched a few games. There was Rock Bottom Brewery at the Prune Yard.
Right.
Probably the best food of the... Henry's is outstanding.
Yeah.
But you could actually watch several TVs hit a Rock Bottom in the Prune Yard. So lots of choices there.
Well, David, welcome to San Jose. And I hope you get some good viewing pleasure out of the Sharks here.
Fantastic.
Let's go to Lore, who emailed us back.
Lore.
Lore says, every time I think about the play of Mark Edward Vlasic, I wonder if he came into the NHL too early. Is it only me who sees some possible parallels to Brad Stewart or Matt Carl? Doug Wilson has said many times that he believes in letting players play on the big club when they're ready or have earned it. Can't be a black and white issue, but he wonders what we think. Lore gave us a little bit more information about his name, but it's not Scandinavian because apparently Lore in most Scandinavian languages means thigh. So Lore would not be a Scandinavian name. So it's good to know. I like to learn things here on the podcast. And also Lore is moving, was in London in the UK, and he's moving to Australia. So he wants an Aussie accent from us, dude. You don't have an Aussie accent?
I'm going to have to work on it.
Well, you know, the problem is that in America, we only listen to Americans, right? So you go to other places around the world and you hear American television, you can develop a decent American accent. All I have to go from is Chase from House and,
You go Crocodile Dundee. Dude.
Yeah, and Crocodile Dundee, which is
not a knife. This is a knife.
Which is like the worst. It's like the Dick Van Dyke. You know, it's the worst. The only thing about Aussie, it's a little more pinched. Than UK, right? Or even from New Zealand.
Okay, since we like a good challenge,
okay,
I'm going to throw it out there. We're going to do an Australian accent off next week.
Oh, God.
All right, dude? We're going to do an
Australian. This is your training.
No,
this is your job.
Dude.
Okay,
you've heard my other accents. They're not exceptional.
This is true. Okay. You're right about that. Not that my accents have been any better. So an Aussie off next week.
Mean?
This is going to be awesome.
Good day, governor.
Good day, governor. Actually, maybe I can go back to the Simpsons episode where they go to Australia. I can think about that. She's like,
all right, we're going to Lore, what we'd love you to do is please write in and send us a line of dialogue that you'd like us to say. And other listeners can send in some dialogue, and then perhaps we will try them in the Aussie off.
Be ear. Okay. Anyway.
Rain in Spain lies mainly on Mark Edward Vlasic's plane.
Okay. So let's talk about Vlasic. I mean, Vlasic's obviously, since Laura sent this email, has gone on a bit of a scoring tear.
Oh, he's lighting it up, dude.
He is lighting it up, actually. So I don't necessarily think he was in the NHL too soon, because I don't think he was really meant to be a Mike Green acolyte. I think he was supposed to be a very mobile, good shutdown defenseman, and for the most part, that is what he's delivered. Of course, we would all like to see him contribute more on the offensive side. We thought we saw that a couple years ago. We were hoping to see that continue. Maybe that's not in his future, right? Maybe he's just going to be a good defensive defenseman. And that's pretty much it. And he'll get some points now and again. And that's more or less how she rolls, right?
Well, you know, I mean, I think you kind of know how I feel about Vlasic. I don't think he's a bad player. I just think he's miscast as our shutdown defenseman. I don't think that that's who he is, dude. And I don't think he's big enough. I don't think he plays.
What about Scott Hannon? I mean, Scott Hannon's not a big hitter.
No, I know, but Scott Hannon just always seemed to not be. I sometimes feel like Vlasic is going the other way. Like, I mean, when contact is coming, he just seems to not be interested. Now, sometimes he does initiate it and he has that streak, but it's just not consistent enough yet. And I'm not looking to give him away, but. You know, I still think that we can do better in the top four than that, or at least give him the support so that he's not having to kind of worry about both things. See, he's not a complete defenseman.
Right.
Not in that Duncan Keith mold where he can really do a lot.
Well,
of
who is?
I know, dude, but like right now he's being asked to do a lot. You know, he was kind of half babysat last year by Rob Blake, and now he's the babysitter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's Jocelyn or Moore or Braun or Demers, he is the veteran on the ice. And I don't think we've really seen him have to be in that position before. And now that he is in that position, he's not really being very successful.
Right.
Now, lately, he's turning around. Let's hope that he can continue to be on that streak, dude.
I'd like to see that. All right, dude. Another thing in the news is there was an Ice Insights last Saturday before the Chicago game. We've gone to these in the past, just like State of the Sharks, and almost with 100% certainty, I can say these things are incredibly dull. But of course, this time, I read the recap on Working the Corners, David Pollock's blog, and there's like four awesome quotes that Doug Wilson said. So, I mean, there was all these great things that he said that were interesting, and of course, we missed it, but...
What'd he say, dude?
Thank God for David Pollock. Well, for one thing... Someone said, I think to the effect, I'm paraphrasing, that Dan Boyle is really the only one who seems to look like he cares out there night after night. And Doug Wilson said something to the effect, well, you know, Dan Boyle tries too hard sometimes, and sometimes he skates the puck up the ice and weaves in and out of people, and he wishes he would just stick to the game plan and chip it behind the defense, which is what they're supposed to be doing, which, you know, was a bit of a surprising knock against Dan Boyle. I didn't expect that. You know, I mean, I think that I agree with that statement to a large extent. I mean, he seems to really honestly care. I mean, does he have off nights? Of course, they all do. But, you know, this is a guy who I think has played almost as consistently as anybody on the team. I mean, we saw some, you know, people on the second line a little slow in the beginning of the season, and now we're seeing the first line slow. I mean, Dan Boyle hasn't had like that slow of a stretch. I mean, he's played pretty well all year.
I can't remember ever seeing him take a shift off. He tries so hard, dude. He scores for the other team sometimes.
Yeah. All right. He passes to them sometimes. He'll actually
literally put the puck in the net. Yeah. As we saw last year in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
that was a little surprising.
I think that was a surprising comment. I mean, he also made a comment about Jonathan Chychrun, right?
Yeah, he made a comment about Chychrun and how he thought that Ottawa didn't maybe give him much of a chance to succeed.
Interesting.
Which is kind of interesting because that was sort of how we thought about Jonathan Chychrun when he was in San Jose for a while.
He got demoted pretty fast to that third and fourth line last year. The year before that, where, mm-hmm. you know, he started off the season super strong. Remember, he had two power play goals in that first game against the Ducks.
I do remember.
And then all of a sudden, he has been banished, and Chychrun is not effective as a third line player like he was when he first entered the NHL.
That's right.
He can't do it. Like, no. He doesn't have the wheels, and he doesn't have the inclination to really be that type of player, you know?
Yeah.
He's not all of a sudden going to become Jamal Mayers, you know, overnight. You're not going to see Chychrun just running around out there like he was at the beginning of his career. That's just not who he is. So funny how he sort of put the onus on Ottawa there and not so much on the Sharks. Though, you know, a lot of the blame has to go to Chychrun himself because right. he was not able to deliver the goods. He's having a pretty good year in Worcester, dude.
Yeah, I have to play it because we're already here.
All right. All
right, here we go. Know what time it is. It's Chychrun Watch 2010. Seriously?
Yes, seriously. Chychrun is still leading the team in points. He has 30 points in 28 games. He's a -3, which on this team is not the worst in the team, certainly not the best. We have Dan DeSilva and Andrew Desjardins +11 and +10 respectively. But we also got guys like Steven Zaleski, who's -7. We got Corey Quirk's -5. We got some other stuff. So Chychrun is probably their best player. He's got the most goals and the most assists on the team. The next player's only got 18 points, and he's got... Wait, am I right on this? Yeah, he's got 30. The next guy's got 18. Okay? Chychrun is by far and away the team's MVP in Worcester right now. Does that mean he's coming up to the Sharks? No. But, you know, it's certainly not embarrassing, and my hat is off to him. So, let's see. More stuff about the Doug Wilson Ice Insights. He quoted a stat. A lot of people, and I know we've lamented the loss of Rob Blake, and we thought, oh, this is going to be a real problem for the Sharks here when we saw the defense and how it was turning out early in the year. He quoted a stat I thought was interesting. The Sharks were 10-2 without Blake in the lineup last year. I was a little surprised. I didn't expect that either. Mm. So... That's quite a few things.
The Sharks are not 10-2 right now. Let's be clear, Doug Wilson. So
that's
I think
true.
I don't really. I mean, I see his point, but if he's sort of walking around repeating that to himself as like a reason not to maybe improve this team, well, we were 10-2 last year, we're in the wrong place, so we don't really need to do anything. I can stick with this. We're right. just going to roll with this. We're going to 10-2.
Well, I don't think he said that.
Well, he obviously was ready for that question if he busted that stat out.
Yeah, yeah.
You can expect that question. I think the best question and answer may have been the response sort of dogging Todd McClellan's hair.
Yeah, he called him like, he talked about his rooster head, I think, which is pretty nice.
Yeah, so. He said something about motivating the team. He said, you know, that the coach doesn't need to motivate the team all the time, but if McClellan's downplaying how he doesn't motivate the team, then, you know, he's not being honest because you could see his rooster head, you know, perking up sometimes on the bench. Dude, that was awesome.
Yeah. So
I think whenever we say the name, Todd McClellan.
Yeah. It's gonna have to be one of these.
Welcome to the podcast. Dude, a few last things before we get out of here.
Yeah.
Marco Sturm, now a member of the LA Kings.
That's right.
Who cares? More excited.
Who cares?
Brian Ralston waived today by the New Jersey Devils.
Yeah, why this late? I'm surprised it took him this long.
Yeah. The first of probably many major changes, I would imagine the coach is next. Speaking of coaches, Randy Carlyle extended by the Anaheim Ducks. Surprised?
No, I mean, it's Bob Murray's problem, but it's only 1 year, so.
I know, but it's just so funny that this team doesn't fit his image anymore.
Yeah.
I think it's a real mismatch, although they still somehow are winning games. I have no idea how. They're horrible.
Dude, have you seen the Linus Omar shootout goal where he does the spinorama at the beginning and then ends up beating Dan Ellis with a 5-hole wrist shot?
I haven't.
It's pretty good. I definitely recommend checking that out on YouTube. And the funny thing is Dan Ellis then ripped him and said, "We have a classy game and I don't know why you would showboat like that," or something along those lines. You have a reaction to that statement, dude?
Stop the puck?
Yeah. That would be my reaction as
right.
well.
All right.
I mean, this kid wasn't trying to show anybody up. It's not like he's out there doing the crotch chop at people. You know, it's like he's not taunting anybody. I mean, he's a kid. He's doing some fun. He's playing in the NHL. You know, what's the problem? And he scores on Dan Ellis. I mean, he beats
no one him. Likes to have their lunch money stolen, Mike. That's yeah. what happened to Dan Ellis. Dan Ellis has bigger problems, like his goals against average.
Yeah.
We know because he's on our fantasy team. Thanks
we
for
certainly
killing us.
Do know. We do know. But I think that pretty much does it for this week, dude. We're going to be back next week and we'll be
this
talking
is a
more
big short. Road trip, actually. I mean, you yeah. know, I don't like to say big early, but it's important. They just got off the road. Now they're back on the road with two very winnable games in an important grudge match against Dallas, dude. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dallas on the second half of back-to-back. That's going to be tough coming from Nashville, and then St. Louis on Saturday. And then I'm not sure when exactly we'll record the podcast, but we do have Edmonton next Tuesday at home. So hopefully that'll be a game that we can win. But we basically have, you know, two tough games coming up in the Blues and the Stars.
I would say I'm going to go a 3-point trip, dude.
Mm, okay.
3 points.
3 points.
So that means they'll probably get six.
Right. Okay. So everybody knows where to put your money in Vegas on that deal. All right, everybody.
Dude, have a good week.
You too. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll talk to you next week.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.